From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, as fires rage across California, destroying everything in the path, California Governor Gavin Newsom feels compelled to lecture on global warming.
The science is in, and observed evidence is self-evident that climate change is real.
California Congressman Doug LaMalfa is here to respond. Following through on a commitment to clamp down on the importation of products made in China through forced labor, the Department of Homeland Security announced Monday new restrictions on imports of apparel, hair products, and technology goods from companies in the region of China where the Uyghur Muslims are being held in concentration camps. Acting Deputy Secretary Ken Cuccinelli is here with more. And as the Trump administration is expanding the reach of the Mexico City policy, which protects U.S. taxpayers from funding abortion or abortion referrals in our foreign aid, we'll hear from Jenny Lichter, who is the Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy. Also, after a report from the Discovery Institute documenting widespread programs within the federal workforce promoting critical race theory, the Trump administration is pulling the plug on several training programs, like a 13-week CDC series called Naming, Measuring, and Addressing the Impacts of Racism on the Health and Well-Being of the Nation and the World, end quote. But the programs are so pervasive that many agencies don't even know the programs are being funded or occurring. The U.S. Department of Energy is now launching a department-wide investigation into their diversity, equity, and inclusion training sessions as a result of an inquiry by Missouri Senator Josh Hawley. Senator Hawley joins us later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it is at T Perkins. Let me remind you, every Wednesday night, 8 p.m., between now and the election, Pray, Vote, Stand, a 30-minute broadcast, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can tune in. Go to PrayVoteStand.com. Also, reminding you, next week, next Tuesday, the Values Voter Summit starts. And again, it will be every night from 8 p.m. till 9:30. And you can register for free. I know normally you got to come all the way here to Washington, D.C. to be a part of it. Well, this year, you can do it from the comfort of your own home. Tuesday through Friday night, 8 p.m. Eastern to 9:30 p.m. Eastern, we'll be hearing from President Trump, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. We'll be hearing from Secretary Ben Carson. We'll be hearing from a lot of folks. And you will not want to miss this. We've got some breakout sessions. Yes, we'll be doing the breakout sessions online, gearing up and equipping you for the upcoming election. Again, you can find out more by going to TonyPerkins.com. All right, before I jump into our first topic, the fires that are raging in California, I want to say this, that we certainly empathize with the folks in California, Oregon, and elsewhere that have been impacted by these historic fires. And we're also praying for those in the path of Sally right now and those that are recovering from Laura. In fact, tomorrow, Franklin Graham's going to be joining me on the program with an update on Samaritan's Purse they've responded to all of these areas. We're going to be talking about that and what you can do to help those individuals that have been impacted by these natural disasters, as well as we're going to talk about the Washington Prayer March that's happening on Saturday, September the 26th. So be sure and tune in tomorrow. Franklin Graham joins me. All right. On Monday, President Trump traveled to California. And as I was talking about these fires, California roughly has 100 million acres. When it's all said and done, we may see about 3% of the state really gone up in flames through these wildfires. It's quite significant. Well, President Trump has pointed to the poor or non-existent land management techniques in these vast areas of forest. I mean, you got all this dead timber down there, and it contributes to it. Well, California Governor Gavin Newsom pointed to something else.
We obviously feel very strongly that the hots are getting hotter, the dries are getting drier. When we're having heat domes the likes of which we've never seen in our history, the hottest August ever in the history of the state, the ferocity of these fires, the drought 5+ years, losing 163 million trees to that drought, something's happened to the plumbing of the world. And we come from a perspective, humbly, where we submit the science is in and observed evidence is self-evident, that climate change is real, and that is exacerbating this. And so I think there's an area of at least commonality on vegetation, forest management, but please respect, and I know you do, the difference of opinion out here as it relates to this fundamental issue on the issue of climate change.
Well, here to talk about the need for help and not lectures is the congressman from the 1st District of California. It's all the way up at the tip of the northern part of California, beautiful area of the country, is Congressman Doug LaMalfa. Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Good to be on with you.
Well, I love your part of the state. It is, to me, the most beautiful part of the state, and it pains me to hear not only the impact upon the land up there, the beautiful landscape, but obviously the family, the communities, the people that are being impacted. Give us the latest.
Well, we do have a really beautiful thing going. I suppose every congressman and woman would say they have that in their district, but we have Mount Lassen, we have Mount Shasta, multiple lakes, the high desert, agriculture in the flatlands, you know, just a lot going for us. But we also have the difficulty of overcoming many years of environmental shutdown of what it is we need to do. And so the fires have been rampant. You may remember the town of Paradise from 2 years ago, wiped out by wildfire. 90% of the buildings and homes were gone from that. And so we're rebuilding from that. There's a multifacets to what is wrong. One of the chief things, and I'm a federal representative, you know, so obviously as president, and what is it we can do with federal lands to make them more effectively fire safe or fire resistance or the ability to knock fire down when it will and does occur? And that's the stumbling block we've faced for 40 to 50 years from environmental regulations and the court appointees that back up every lawsuit that seems to come along.
Yeah, and so to say that this is all about climate change and therefore we can't do anything about it is simply not true. I mean, when you look at the accumulation of wood fuel in the forest and a lot of the stuff restricted, you've got higher populations, you've got greater electricity transmission, distribution lines, you've got a lot going on there. So it's not just as simple as saying, well, we can't do anything about it other than tax people and take away sovereignty because we got to enter into, you know, the climate peace accord.
Well, Tony, I had to pass in the year 2018 a bill to make it a little simpler to get the permits from the federal government to clear along the power lines when you have a hazardous tree, a dead tree, a tree that might be leaning, one that is likely to cause foliage to get upon the power lines, and then you get two bad things, sparking a fire and the blackouts that can come with that too. So why is that a modern idea that you have to get the regulators to say, you know, you need to issue those permits to take a hazardous tree down right away? But it goes way beyond that. Forest Service has been pretty much paralyzed by the threat of lawsuit or the thought of a lawsuit preventing them from doing the work either during, you know, the green timber process or even after a fire. We had a 400,000-acre fire in the western part of Northern California a couple years ago. And it took 2 years of dithering to figure out how we're going to take 7,000, again, out of 400,000, about 2%, and clear along roadways the dead trees and the other material that has since grown back so that we can have along the highways and other areas a buffer for, you know, where fires can start. You know, the car fire, it's known as up in Redding, that burned so horrendously 2 years ago, was started by a person with a flat tire on their trailer, a car trailer, a boat trailer, I mean, a camper, whatever it was. And so the tire went flat. They didn't know. It's innocent. But the wheels started dragging on the ground and making sparks, and it kicked a fire up. Well, if they had the type of clearance along the roads, for example, it would have been much easier for the next person to come along. You know, a guy in a pickup or a local logger would see that and be able to knock it down. Instead, it turns into a giant, you know, over 100,000-acre problem.
And this is all because of government restriction and inability to do something that's common sense. Now, a minute ago, I said the peace accord. I meant the Paris Climate Accord.
Yeah.
But you've pointed out that, you know, it's more than just these lectures that the governor is wanting to do. Is that, and he's been in your district where folks have been impacted by these fires, and he's threatening to withhold the coronavirus aid money because they're going indoors to try to get fresh air as they eat.
Right, the restaurants, and they're starting to get militant about it because it's been really inequitable. You know, we see the stats on COVID virus cases. Well, when you count cases, they're counting everything from day one, whether you want to peg that at January or March or whatever. They're not counting current cases, which you'll see like 90% of the cases have already recovered been taken care of one fashion or the other. So I have 11 counties in this Northern California district. California has 58 counties total. And so I have counties that have zero infections. I have counties at five or 10 or 30. Some of the larger ones, you know, they got a couple hundred. So we're being treated the same as gigantic urban areas that have obviously bigger challenges. So, and it isn't even the operation of a restaurant that's the problem. They know how to go in and social distance and keep people apart a little bit and wear the mask and this and that while they're serving people. And a barber shop, you know, one guy in a chair at a time. This isn't that tough. You might have other situations where maybe a large family gathering happened on a private area, and so you get a flare-up. Or Chico State here in Butte County, you know, the students come back and they start partying, and then you get a flare-up. Like, what, does the whole county need to be punished for that? That's the arbitrary stuff they're coming from with Sacramento. So, you know, and then he wants to go in on climate change, which we can talk about, too, if you want.
But he's basically strong-arming, from a political standpoint, people who's they've lost their homes. They're in an area that the air quality is horrible right now because of these fires. And they're doing this nonsense stuff. I mean, what is he doing to help the people in California who've lost their homes or have had to evacuate?
Well, you know, you have people in shelters of some type or another. And, you know, whether it might be at the fairgrounds, it might be some trailers that are left over from 2 years ago from the FEMA trailers from the Paradise Fire called the Camp Fire. You know, those are being about to be phased out. We're going to have to bring them in. I'm going to slow down. Have to bring them online again to have people be able to utilize those. But they had a situation where people were forced to sleep outside on the ground because they wouldn't let them pitch a tent. So I don't quite follow some of the logic. But in that, as you're saying, if you wanted to go to a restaurant just to have a little respite from what you might be sheltering, you have to either sit outside or not at all, because they send what the governor Newsom calls is a strike force up to enforce. Can you imagine? How does that sound like it's serving the people? We're going to send our strike force in your community.
And these are people that may have lost everything, or they've evacuated. They're just trying to get something to eat and trying to get some fresh air. I mean, this kind of stuff drives me crazy, because I'm on, like you, flying back and forth to your district. I'm on planes three or four times a week, and every seat on the plane is full for 2 or 3 hours. I'm rubbing elbows with the person next to me. But these mom-and-pop restaurants, they can't have, you know, 50% capacity in their restaurants. They're being driven out of business.
And they're barely making it at 50%. Some of them have 25% edicts that run them out. But, you know, for the governor to come up and preach in my district about climate change, you know, my deal is, if we have climate change, fine, you can go argue about it in the other room. But let's do something about thinning the forests right now.
Right.
That we can deal with whatever the climate is doing,
That's taking responsibility and doing something you can do, as opposed to pointing to something you really can't affect. Congressman, we're out of time. I want to thank you, Doug, for joining us. Always great to talk with you.
Glad to be with you.
All right, folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, Ken Cuccinelli joins us to talk about Department of Homeland Security cracking down on China goods.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? And when looking at what's going on in our culture, do you wonder, what can I do? For the past 15 years, FRC Action has hosted Values Voters Summit, an event for people like you who want to shape the culture so that all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. And this Values Voters Summit is going viral, so everyone can tune in and be encouraged to pray, to vote, and to stand in these significant times. Past speakers included President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Dr. Ben Carson, and Dana Lash. Register today for your free digital pass and join us virtually from September the 22nd to the 25th from 8 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Don't miss out. Remember, pray, vote, stand.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in any time. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
frc.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us. We ran out of time there with Congressman LaMalfa and talking about two of my really hot-button issues, the irrational response to the coronavirus and climate change. But I wanted to make this one point on the climate issue because Joe Biden has called President Trump a climate arsonist. Why? Because he refuses to buy into this idea of all of this is the result of man-made climate change. And instead, we ought to take some practical steps like, as we were talking about, managing the forest and making sure that we're, you know, picking up the dead limber, allowed to cut trees off of the power lines without having to have an act of Congress to do so, which makes sense. It's common sense, something that's in short supply today. But anyway, I'm sure we'll talk more about that later. But I want to talk about this now, this topic. The Department of Homeland Security is making good on a promise. We actually had Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on a few weeks ago talking about this, how the federal government was going to crack down on goods produced by China in regions where forced labor is taking place. We're talking about Xinjiang province where the Uyghur Muslims are in these concentration camps. Well, earlier this week, the Department of Homeland Security has announced they're cracking down on some of those goods produced in this region. Joining me now to talk about it is the Acting Deputy Secretary of Homeland Security, Ken Cuccinelli. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, as always.
All right. Tell our listeners what you all are doing to put pressure on China to stop the human rights abuses.
So this week, Customs Border Protection and the Department of Homeland Security issued 5 what are called withhold release orders. Everybody knows about the work CBP does on the border enforcing, you know, fighting against illegal immigration, but they're also in charge of all of our ports. So all the trade that comes and goes to the United States passes through Customs Border Protection. And so what we have done is issue 5 withhold release orders, which we call WROs for short. Got to have an acronym, right?
Yeah, and federal government. Got to have that acronym.
You bet. And so that announces that we will not release products from these 5 companies into the United States to be sold. So it essentially blocks these producers. And they produce a variety of things, cotton and apparel, computer parts. You've got some hair products, other things. And they all come from the Xinjiang province that you talked about, where the Uyghur Muslims are held in concentration camps, literally between 1 and 3 million of them, and forced to perform the labor on these products to produce them. And so we, when we generate enough evidence to identify what companies are using this slave labor, because that's what it is, slave labor, we block those products. And that's what CBP did this week. They did it with five different, really four companies, and a subsidiary, if you will, of the Communist Party, which is, they call it a vocational educational school. What it really is a concentration camp. And they farm out their laborers to other companies to do work. And we issued WROs to those other companies already, CBP did, earlier in the year. So this has been a very aggressive acceleration in enforcement actions to put pressure on China to stop its concentration camp policies, its human rights abuses in the Xinjiang province, and really to set these people free as anybody is in China. Yesterday, or this week's actions, addressed trade worth over $200 million annually. So not a small hit. And we are looking at a number of other actions where the investigations are ongoing.
Well, I know back in July is when you seized, I think, about a 13-ton shipment of human hair that came from China. So this is an ongoing process, as you said. Any connection to U.S. businesses here with this these products coming in?
Well, all of them come in and are sold by businesses in the United States. They all establish relationships here. So no particular business. It's not like we're targeting one. I don't even want to use examples because I don't want to defame anybody accidentally. But we did previously in late June, along with the Department of State, and I imagine Secretary Pompeo probably talked about it when he was with you, and the Secretary of Labor and Secretary of the Treasury, we put out a business advisory with respect to doing business in the Xinjiang province. And we put American businesses on notice and businesses around the world that if you want to keep importing into the United States, you really need to disentangle yourself from these slave labor practices. And businesses have begun to respond. That doesn't mean they all have, but the ones that are slow on their feet are going to find their products seized at U.S. Ports if they don't make the adjustments needed to avoid entangling themselves from a business standpoint with Xinjiang slave labor.
You know, Ken Cuccinelli, I think this is extremely important because with the federal government, the Trump administration saying, hey, this is not a wink and a nod. We're actually taking actions and we're giving you fair warning as an American business who may have, you know, been profiting from this slave labor. Maybe you weren't completely sure about it, but we're pulling back the curtain and there's no excuses now. I think this is extremely important that businesses have been put on notice and you're following through.
Absolutely right. And this is a president who's been emphatic about that with us. You know, he has always made these human rights abuses an important issue. We're using the tools afforded to us in ways that no prior administration has done, far more aggressively. And, you know, that's an important part of him keeping his promises. We're doing the groundwork at his behest. It's his administration, of course. And unfortunately, there's a big target there in Xinjiang. It covers a lot of territory and a lot of trade, and we're just beginning to interdict it. We're going to do a lot more in this front in the days, weeks, and months to come.
And no doubt it will have an impact economically as the door is shut for these products.
Well,
they're going to rethink.
Americans don't want to buy them.
That's right.
They don't want to be complicit in this immorality.
And China is going to rethink the use of this forced labor, hopefully. We'll be
That's
praying to that end and working to that end. Ken Cuccinelli, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tony. Always a pleasure.
All right, folks, more Washington Watch to come. On the other side of the break, the Trump administration expanding the application of the Mexico City policy. We'll talk more about that next. Don't go away.
Oh, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed, so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
As churches consider gathering again, they should develop plans to reopen and operate according to the guidance of the CDC, along with state and local guidance that does not violate the First Amendment and other religious freedom protections. Family Research Council has a helpful resource with best practices and tips for churches and places of worship to consider when crafting their reopening plans. Romans 13 instructs Christians to be subject to the governing authorities. The civil authorities have a difficult task ahead, and we should seek to be a part of the solution through cooperation and service to our communities. Some states and authorities like Nevada and California are treating religious entities more restrictively than non-religious entities. But as long as restrictions are temporary, applied equally to religious and non-religious gatherings alike, and there is a good reason for putting them in place, government restrictions are not likely to violate religious freedom protections. To learn more and to view this resource, visit frc.org/churchguidelines.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. Every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Pray, Vote, Stand. Between now and the election, Congresswoman Debbie Lesko from Arizona is going to be joining me this week, along with James Robeson. He's going to be with us. A powerful personal story. We're going to be focused on the issue of life. And speaking of the issue of life, there has not been a more pro-life administration than the Trump administration. Now, within 72 hours of the Trump administration coming into office, they put back in place the Mexico City policy, which goes back to the 1980s with President Ronald Reagan. And I know we use those terms, a lot of people say, what's that? It simply says that our foreign policy and our foreign aid and how we spend our foreign money and the organizations we work with, they cannot provide or promote abortion. All right? So that was a first step. But they didn't stop there. They expanded it to go to second and third level contractees with in our foreign activity. But just this week, announcements that even within the Department of Defense that they are now going to be applying the Mexico City policy. Joining me now to talk about this is the Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy, Jenny Lichter. Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me, Tony. As a former FRC employee, I'm particularly thrilled to be with you.
Well, we're thrilled where you are and the work that you're doing, and we appreciate your joining us in the work that this administration is doing that you're a part of. Explain to our listeners this latest application of the Mexico City policy.
Sure. So as you said, Tony, putting in place the Mexico City policy is one of the first things that President Trump did very early on in this administration. This policy had been essentially a political football, right? Republican presidents put it up and Democrat presidents take it down. It's the first chance they get. But this administration, as you said, didn't want to just stick to the sort of standard Mexico City policy as good as it is, started looking on day one for ways to expand it. So as you mentioned, we have put in place some expansions already. and are always looking for ways to make sure that we're implementing it ever more carefully and taking every opportunity to cement this policy kind of in every nook and cranny of federal policymaking and grant making. So this week, a few more entities are proposing that they will include this key provision, this Mexico City policy provision limiting how certain types of funds can be made, will include it in their contracts that receive any global health assistance. So this is of a piece, again, with how we're trying to approach not just the Mexico City policy, but all pro-life policy, where we want to be using every tool that's available to the executive branch to be protecting life at home and abroad. And we want to be using taxpayer money responsibly and avoiding using taxpayer money to pay for or promote abortions in any way. So we're really excited about this new opportunity to just, again, kind of cement this policy a little bit more, expand it a little bit more.
I want to underscore that point, Jenny, because this is, you know, almost 4 years in the march. And oftentimes what I've seen in my 25 years in the political realm is that you make an announcement, you get the headlines, and then you move on, and it may or may not get done. This has been a systematic application of the president's commitment to making sure that taxpayers were not on the hook to fund abortion or promote abortion in our foreign policy. And he put a team in place, yourself included, that's looking, how do we apply this? What's an area that has not been covered by this? So this is an ongoing process.
That is exactly right. And I'll just flag, too, for your listeners, an exciting report that a few of our agencies put out just a few weeks ago about the implementation of the Mexico City policy. And that report is a little bit of a weedy deep dive into what implementation looks like, but it gives a lot of information about what happened when this policy was put in place. And it's a good news story. It shows that, well, for the most part, our grantees around the world agreed to the Mexico City policy condition, contra what you might hear from the left, that right, trying to maintain pro-life principles scares people away in the global health space. In a few cases, there were a few grantees who declined to agree to this condition for ideological reasons. And that includes, by the way, International Planned Parenthood and Marie Stopes, who are major abortion funders and promoters. They declined to continue to take certain types of U.S. government money because they didn't want to have to comply with this condition. But the agencies were right away able to pivot to other providers who stepped in to provide the health programming that we want to be funding. So in my mind, this is just a great, great story about how principled pro-life policies and provision of quality health care to women and girls around the world do not conflict, despite what you might hear from the left. We can do both of these things at once, and the U.S. remains fully committed to being the largest funder of global health programming around the world, but also stand by our pro-life commitments and show the world how we can do those things simultaneously.
Just to summarize, Jenny, on the way out here, is that while the left says, oh, this is going to hurt the provision of services, the report shows very clearly there's been no decline in the services. We can do this and do it in a pro-life way.
That is exactly right.
All right, Jenny Lichter, thanks so much for joining us, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, Deputy Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy, a former FRC'er, Jenny Lichter. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Missouri Senator Josh Hawley about the critical race theory and how it's infiltrated training programs throughout the federal workforce. He's shining a light on it. We're going to talk about it next with him. Don't go away. We're back after this. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
The rapidly changing moral landscape of the 21st century presents a challenge for Christians committed to biblical sexual ethics. An uprising against morality has overturned centuries of norms concerning the family, marriage, and human sexuality. Secular culture is not the only challenger of Christian sexual ethics. Increasingly, theologically liberal churches and denominations are rejecting the church's historic teaching on marriage. As a result, Christians are facing increasing pressure to compromise the Bible's teaching on human sexuality. How should Christians who are committed to God's Word respond to these challenges? What does the Bible teach about sexuality? Family Research Council has a new publication that presents the biblical principles for human sexuality. It lays out a survey of culture, scripture, and church history that will help pastors and all Christians meet modern-day challenges to biblical sexuality with truth and love. To access this publication, visit frc.org/human sexuality.
The history of the United States is preserved in archives, books, and the collective memory of the American people. It is also preserved through monuments and memorials that visually represent the extraordinary history of our nation. To tell these stories and remind ourselves of the importance of these memorials, Family Research Council has a new blog series highlighting the most recognizable and popular monuments in our nation's capital. This series devotes particular attention to the historical and spiritual themes depicted in each monument, sharing some not-so-well-known facts about their history, design, and symbolic meaning that shed light on our nation's deep religious heritage. This series aims to inspire the next generation to see the importance of these monuments and to remind us of the virtues and lessons that they memorialize. To read FRC's Monument Series, visit frcblog.org/monuments. Again, that's frcblog.org/monuments.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, let me ask you the question. Have you taken the pledge or the challenge to pray, vote, and stand? Pray for the nation, vote biblical values in the upcoming election, and stand for those truths no matter what, no matter what the cancel culture says. Take the challenge. Go to tonyperkins.com. All right, you may have seen this. There was a number of documents, a published report by the Discovery Institute that began to pull back the curtain on some of the programs that were being implemented with the federal workforce. In fact, the president did an executive order, or actually it was a direction through Russ Vogt, who is at OMB, about the spending of millions of taxpayer dollars to train government workers to believe divisive anti-American propaganda. A lot of it goes back to this critical race theory. Well, some agencies, it's so pervasive and it's so permeated, they don't even know what's going on. And our next guest, Senator from Missouri, kind of helped blow the whistle on what's happening at the Department of Energy. Josh Hawley represents the state of Missouri, and he joins us now. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we jump into the what you discovered, let's talk just first, give our listeners kind of an understanding. There's this discussion of this critical race theory. Why is this a problem?
Well, critical race theory has its roots in Marxism, really. It's the theory that says that America is systemically racist, is structurally oppressive. Like Marxism, it tends to identify Christianity as a form of structural oppression and institutions, culture, traditions that are built around the Christian faith, that are derived from the Christian faith as being structurally inherently oppressive, of course, also very hostile to free markets and free enterprise. And that's really the intellectual origins of much of critical race theory and what became sort of a social Marxism in the middle of the last century. And now, Tony, we find it all over our universities. It's been very common at universities for decades now, and it's making its way into the federal government and into the rhetoric of the radical left. And we've heard it all over this summer from the radical left. And now we're seeing taxpayer dollars being used to try and teach it. And that is, I think, where it's time we draw the line.
And that's what you've done here. We've got a federal agency. In fact, it's not just one. There's many. But with taxpayer dollars in these training sessions with federal workers, we actually see this anti-American divisive curriculum that's being driven throughout the administration or throughout the federal government. Talk about what you discovered and what you've called for.
Thanks to the reporting of some great investigative journalists, we discovered that at Sandia Labs in New Mexico, under the authority of the Department of Energy, there were actually taxpayer-funded retreats at a resort, by the way. I mean, it couldn't just go out and do this at any normal place, but it had to be a resort, taxpayer-funded, to send Sandia Lab employees to go get training in critical race theory and to learn to understand how America's structurally racist, there's structural oppression everywhere, to embrace these theories. It's unbelievable. If you look at the curriculum, of course, it's also very anti-conservative, anti-Trump. But most importantly, it's anti-America. And it is, in its origins, Marxist. The idea that we would be spending taxpayer money on this at resorts, no less, is outrageous. So I called for an immediate accounting and investigation. I'm delighted to tell you that the secretary of the Department of Energy immediately launched a full department-wide review. And then, as you alluded to, the president signed an executive order not long after banning the teaching of critical race theory across all federal executive agencies, which was a great move.
In to your point, the secretary responded, but as I was reading some of it, part of it was they had no clue it was going on. It's so pervasive and so commonplace that it's not even recognized until you start to pull back the curtain, so to speak, and begin to dig a little bit.
And part of this is, Tony, it has become so common at
I think we may have. There he is. We lost you there for a minute, Senator.
I was just saying that it has become so pervasive at universities, critical race theory and other forms of critical theory, critical gender studies. There are a number of these critical legal studies, a number of these critical critiques that all share a common ideological framework. It's so common at universities that we're seeing more and more folks in the federal government, managers and so forth, who have been taught this and believe it and think that there's nothing wrong with it, and now they're trying to push it to federal employees using federal tax dollars. But it's time we called this out for the radicalism that it is. It's time we discussed its Marxist roots and identified the fact that this is not the America that we know, that this is it badly misrepresents American history, and it is, as you say, deeply divisive. You want to divide people in this country, that's
right.
How you do it.
So when you look at what is taking place here, and you know, we're 4 years into a Trump administration, and we're, you know, it takes a while to get through the layers of bureaucracy to actually find these things. How long has this been going on? Does this go back to the Obama administration where we saw a lot of radicalization, or does this predate the Obama administration?
I don't know the answer to that, and I think that those are the answers that we need to get. I also want to know, Tony, have federal laws been violated? Because this money that's being spent, and not just at the Department of Energy, now we also know that similar things were going on in other departments, including potentially the FBI. It is unbelievable what we're finding now about where these trainings have been going and the money that's being spent. So, number one, we need to know how much money. Number two, how long. And number three, is there actually any authorization for this? I know the authorized spending for these purposes. So now we have the question, are federal laws being violated by using federal taxpayer money for this kind of training without congressional authorization? These are the questions I think that we need answered, and they need to be answered in the light of day so that the American public can get the facts.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would venture to say, I don't know this, but I would just venture to say that this is the type of stuff that we saw come in during the Obama administration, because we saw so much radicalization take place not only within education and the classroom, public school classrooms through the Department of Ed, but I think within the federal agencies as well. And this speaks to the importance of elections and the policies that are set. But it does show you how long it takes to make corrections once this stuff gets into place. Senator, before we let you go, I want to shift gears for just a moment because you've been on something else, drawing attention to what's been happening over at Netflix.
Absolutely. And what the Cuties movie, their film that they are distributing, is something that I've called for Netflix to take down. It includes, it's basically child pornography, Tony. And this is sexually exploitative material involving children in this film. I've asked Netflix to respond again in writing to me as to whether or not they inquired as to whether children were sexually abused during this film. Had they talked with experts about the danger of copycat pedophilic behavior that can be encouraged from this film? There's lots of data, as prosecutors can tell you, about what happens when this kind of material is widely available. But right. Netflix really needs to be held to account here for their complicity in this, in distributing this kind of material. They're out there arguing that, oh, my goodness, that this is art, and that you shouldn't criticize it, and that if you do criticize it, you're some sort of right-wing wacko. I'm sorry, but distributing material that features the sexual abuse of young children is just wrong, and it should not happen. It's also potentially illegal, and so I support an investigation by the Department of Justice as well.
Well, it's not just those on the right. Even those on the left have raised alarms about this. Nancy Pelosi's own daughter has said that this is too much. I want to put a bug in your ear about that last point of the Department of Justice. I greatly appreciate the Attorney General William Barr. I think he's doing a great job. In fact, I talked to him briefly yesterday at the White House event with the peace accord. But this is something I think that where we have a lack of focus at the Department of Justice. There are lots going on. But the obscenity laws, I think in part what we see with Netflix is because of a lack of enforcement of clear violations of obscenity laws has allowed them to push the envelope on other things.
And what we're seeing here with this film, Tony, just to underscore that point, I mean, this is folks who have questions about this should just go and look up the reviews. I can't in good conscience recommend anybody actually watch the film, but you can go and read about it, certainly. But we're not just talking here about language that may be offensive or inappropriate. We're not talking about storytelling that is somehow offensive. We're talking about actual sexual exploitation of minor children. And when I say minor, we're talking about 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds in the film that was actually performed as part of the film. This is incredible. We have laws against this sort of sexual abuse of children in this country. And again, for Netflix to be distributing this without any kind of taking any responsibility for it, I think is wrong, and it needs to be stopped. The film should come down.
Well, and I would encourage you to keep the pressure on them and to continue to call for the Department of Justice to investigate. But I would also encourage you to call on them to become more aggressive in enforcing the obscenity laws that we have in this country, because I think they have gone far too long without being enforced. And I think that has given a green light to those that would, in this case, abuse children.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, Tony, I think you're right about that. And we see here with this film just how far folks are willing to push it, and the fact that again, if Netflix would do this without blinking an eye, and is now out there in public mounting a full-throated campaign to deflect blame and defend themselves, I think really tells you sort of the shamelessness that corporation at least has towards this issue involving child welfare.
Well, I think it's a reflection of the coarsening of the culture that has taken place, and all the more reason we need to hold up a standard and enforce that standard. And I appreciate the fact that you're a part of that on Capitol Hill in the Senate, and I appreciate you joining us today, Senator.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. Now, I think it clearly is a reflection of the coarsening of our culture, but there's so many – it's like a – octopus, where it's got the tentacles everywhere. I mean, we're talking about this critical race theory where we're actually sowing seeds, anti-American seeds, in our own federal government. Think about that for a moment. Our own government benefiting from taxpayers. These are people working on the taxpayer dime. And they're actually undergoing on the job, well, it would be like a, workshops that they go to, professional workshops. And it's on this critical race theory about how America's bad. Does that, like, not make sense to you? It certainly doesn't make sense to me. Unless you want to destroy the country. Then it makes perfect sense. And that's what's been happening on college campuses, oftentimes on the taxpayer dime and the dime of parents. And it's obviously made its way into the federal government. But it's even going into the classrooms under the Obama administration. And we talked about this in a couple of special episodes we had last month on public education, where during the Obama administration, we saw the radicalization of the classroom and this type of information, this type of philosophy, ideology infiltrating the classroom. And now we see it on the streets of America. And we have those that want to take it to the Oval Office. Folks, elections matter. We've talked about, just some of the policies today of what's been advanced under this administration juxtaposed to what we saw under the last administration and what we would see in the future, depending upon how we vote. And by the way, I want to offer this again to you, an updated list of all of the accomplishments of this administration on religious liberty issues, life issues, family issues, issues we care about. Text the word actions, that's plural, actions to 53445. That number again, 53445. Text the word actions, 53445. I'll send you a link. It'll be a PDF, and you can share it with your friends. You can put it up on your social media, because there are those that say, well, I just don't really like the tweets, or I don't like this, I don't like that. Look at the policies. My friends, this election is not about personalities. This is really about, as George Barna said, worldview, which lends itself to the type of policies that you will embrace. And when you look at the policies, it's not a question. And again, join us for Pray, Vote, Stand. We'll be focused on the life issue. The life issue, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in. Go to PrayVoteStand.org. PrayVoteStand.org and be a part of this week's Pray, Vote, Stand. All right, thanks so much for joining us, folks. As always, great to be with you. If you need more information, check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.